Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's such a joy to be back on the air with you today on International Life Coach Radio. My name is Charmaine Olswing, and I am the host of today's show. Our topic today is Feel, Love, Heal, Victim or Victor, Consciously Creating Your Life. You may have noticed that I added the name of my company to today's show title. As I've mentioned before, my company is Feel, Love, Heal. These words came to me in complete clarity with relentless determination to be made known. I held on to them for months, not knowing what they really meant, but I knew that there was something deeper that they were going to resurface for. When I wrote down several considerations for my company name, these words just would not leave my mind, and in hearing and repeating their calling, I created my brand. So it's my belief that by feeling our thoughts, listening to our inner child, and truly allowing whatever those emotions are to be heard, then loving ourselves regardless of how the events or the people may have hurt us or caused us these deep-rooted feelings, and knowing that we are perfect right where we are with exactly what we know and how we be, then and only then can we truly and completely heal. So there you have it, Feel, Love, Heal. That's how my company came to fruition. So I wanted to throw out there a quick disclaimer. As you can imagine, today's show can be an extremely sensitive subject for some, and I wanted to put it out there to you that in our pre-show meeting, I spoke with today's guest, and I have her permission to go there. She's also aware that if any topic is overwhelming to discuss, that she has the option to move on to the next subject, and I completely and wholeheartedly 100% respect that. So although that being said, it's still my understanding that she's ready and her heart is wide open to share with you today. So I am excited to be back with another show, and today's guest holds a very, very dear place in my heart. She and I became friends in the early years of high school while playing volleyball in the very competitive and affluent community of Newport Beach, California. And despite growing apart after high school and thanks to the beauty of the internet and Facebook, we were able to reconnect a few years ago, and since then I've learned so much more about this amazing woman. She's an 8-year Navy veteran, injured while on active duty. She's a mother, an advocate, a holistic health coach, and now a public speaker. She is the epitome of what I see as a survivor and a warrior. Oh, it's getting me emotional. Yet her way of being is unlike any I've ever known. She is grace, and she is ease, and she is strength. And it's my honor and my pleasure to introduce you to Jennifer Brooke.
Oh, Charmaine, thank you very, very much for having me tonight. And I'm so happy and grateful to be sharing this space with you tonight.
Well, I obviously think you're amazing, and I'm so grateful you said yes to this. And I am just excited to jump into truly just the choice that we can make between being a victim and a victor. And in our pre-show interview, I was telling you a couple days ago that when I was creating this show's topic, I kept hearing it over and over, and victim or victor, and it didn't matter if it was on TV or something I read online or something that I was hearing inside my own heart, it just kept coming to mind. And because I've known you for so long and I've experienced some of the experiences, I mean, I've been with you throughout your experiences, you're the first person that came to mind because you are truly a survivor and you have never once become a victim in my mind, in my experience of you. That's not to say that we have our down times, and you and I talked about this too, where of course there are going to be moments of just like, wanting to crawl in bed and hide for days and cry, and that's okay too, but not to stay there. So I know that you have survived and thrived many lifetimes in your short 39 years on this planet, and there's a variety of paths we could take on today's show specific to the topic, and each of those would be fascinating and heartbreaking and healing to the listeners. But if it's okay with you, I'd like to focus on the two areas where I see you could have most likely chosen to throw up your hands and give up and essentially become a victim to your circumstances. And due to the nature of them, you would have been able to collect mounds and mounds of evidence to support your experience and your stance. So many people would have agreed and been like, yeah, that would have done me in. Like, it's okay to just go and bury yourself for the rest of your life. Yet you never, ever chose defeat. Would you mind sharing with the listeners a little about your childhood and what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, sure. As all of the listeners just heard, you and I grew up in Newport Beach, and my mother remarried a man when I was 5-6 years old, and I, you know, attended private school, and I just had that life. I was just a little girl growing up. I loved animals and sports, and I loved the beach, but my mother married someone that, you know, I was thinking a lot about this before coming on tonight about, you know, I think a lot of times when we go through challenges, we want to know the answer to why. Why did this happen to me? Why, you know, what was the purpose of this? What did I do wrong? You know, all of those questions. Who in the heavens did I piss off? You know, all of these things. But, and I can honestly say throughout all of my adversity in my 39 years, I've never once been able to answer that question. So I can, as far as my child's concerned, I, to this day, do not really know why the things took place the way they did. I can speculate a couple of different theories, but I really, really have absolutely no idea. But to make a long story short, I was physically abused and emotionally abused by this man who was a very controlling character, and I think really just did not care for the fact that maybe I impacted his idea of life when he, you know, married this young woman. He was a little bit older than my mother. And he was very, very successful international businessman and et cetera. And there just was, I was basically treated I was told and treated that I held no space on this earth and did not matter. And so I was never supported in anything that I cared about. In fact, I was often told that I was not allowed to think the way I thought or feel the way I felt about something, or I wasn't allowed to have an opinion about something that I cared about or mattered. I was just told that that was wrong and I was not allowed to feel that way. And then physical abuse, he was just very violent with me for years. This went on from, I guess, 6 years old, 7 years old time frame, all the way until 15, in which, and Charmaine, you... This is hard in that I led very much a double life. Because I was in private school and I had friends and I was very much in sports and very much into animals and very much into the beach. And I basically, the life I had inside of those closed doors of my home in Newport, or rather Corona del Mar, was an incredibly, incredibly different, polarly differently life than the life I had the second I walked out of those doors. And I had to work very hard at that. The truth is, I lied to everybody. I was a compulsive liar. Why? Because I had to. Nobody could know. Nobody, you know, I remember track meets at Harbor Day School that I, the private school that I attended, when I couldn't arrive at Blue Gold Day because of bruises, because of a dislocated shoulder, that I had to lie about that. I lied to coaches. I lied to our coach, Charlie. I mean, And Charlie has since forgiven me for that. But the point is, I had to lie. And that wasn't easy. I'm very, very grateful that to this day, people that have been close to me, of course, understand that now. But at the time, I was horrified by that. Horrified constantly that my lies would be found out, or that, and you know, convinced nobody's. I mean, I was so afraid because this man was so powerful. I mean, at least to me, he was probably pretty powerful in business as well in international affairs, but was very, very powerful to me. So I mean, I was led to believe that that I was just basically this horrible person. And now I'm lying, which I didn't believe in lying, but I'm lying. So that made me also feel about myself that I was a horrible person. So it just went that way. And then when I was 15, and then a sophomore in high school, one night things got a little bit more out of hand than maybe usual in terms of the physical violence. And he fractured my jaw and strangled me, and anyway, split my lip and just hit me many, many times. And it was all over. He just was a horribly rude and disrespectful man. And, you know, by the time I got into my teens, I am a very incredibly kind person, but I also very much know right and wrong. And I knew I was very much beginning to really feel that just insane anger towards someone. And unfortunately, I used to start to fight, but not physically fight back. I used to express my feelings about my treatment more and more as I was maybe 12 and on. And unfortunately, I paid the price for that more often than not. And that's sort of what happened when I was 15. I was just one of those nights where you've absolutely had it with someone's disrespect. It wasn't even disrespect towards me. It was disrespect about my grandparents. And I used profanity at the dinner table and basically just kind of emotionally unloaded onto him. And he put me in my place pretty violently physically. My mother's role in all of this was la, 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 just really trying to not deal and just always blamed me, saying that I instigated it. I wasn't being good or whatever. And again, and when I was a little girl, I thought that was true. I mean, one time he kicked me down a flight of stairs because I was like 8 or something. I wanted to wake up my mom as she was napping, and I wanted to tell her something that, I mean, probably wasn't important to him, but when I was 8 year old little girl, it was important to me, and she's my mom. And anyway, so things like that. But my mother, just as things got older and got more intense, you know, her role in things was just to really, out of sight, out of mind, what will the neighbors think? You know, I have to make sure that everything is, you know, hid it from the rest of the family. Everyone's told and instructed how they will lie. And it was just very much this double life for everybody. But I think, I'm sorry, did you want to ask me something?
Oh, I'm just sitting here just with a knot in my stomach. I just continue. I mean, this is amazing. You're amazing. Continue.
So anyway, the next few days are kind of in a blur. It's still to this day. But bottom line is I was instructed exactly how I would lie about said event, because I had a fractured jaw. I didn't know I had a fractured jaw at the time. I knew that I like could not speak, and I mean my face was all messed up, and I just was a mess. And I told my mom, that was the first time I told my mom that. I said, you have to make him leave. You have to make him leave. And I think my mom, a wake-up call in for her in that, like, this was really bad. This time it was really bad, you know, that kind of concept. But for her, sadly, she went more into the mode of, okay, how can we cover this up? I mean, she kind of was like, went into, you know, scandal on Hulu about how can we spin this? And she immediately the next day, he didn't leave, and I just was sort of holed up in my room, and she, a very strange event, took me to school, high school, the next day. I don't know. I mean, you, and because I used to train in the gym in our weight room the morning, every morning before school, and, or it was like three mornings a week or something like that. I can't remember, but I used to train, and, she took me in, and I felt like half dead, but half conscious. I mean, I just was, and I remember just like, I don't know what we're doing. I mean, I really was very much in shock probably, and my face was a total mess. And obviously my mother was in shock too. Her actions at that point make no sense. She takes me in. I walked into the locker room, and one of our trainers found me there and just said, and I was crying and just said, what's going on? And then I said, I don't know, and I just can't be here. And I walked, I don't know. I found myself, the next thing I know, in a school counselor's office. I told them everything about basically the last, you know, 7-8 years of my life, but particularly what happened the night before. And of course, they called the police. So, and then the next, to make a long story short, I don't know if I'm taking up too much time here, but it just was, the next year was huge legal fiasco and very chaotic, very, very hard for me. I was put into this little shelter place, and then eventually, I was in the hospital for a little while. And basically, I immediately disappeared from high school. I mean, a lot of people probably remember that we went to high school with. I disappeared. I didn't come back until my senior, or until junior year. So this happened in October of our sophomore year, and then I was gone. And so because I was in the hospital for a while, and then I was in, it's a long story, but I was, had to be shuffled. I was removed from the home. You know, everything was blocked off. It was a huge legal battle. He was arrested in his very international stock business firm, which was a huge scandal in Newport and blah, blah. And it just was a big, big, big mess. And then, you know, my journal was conveniently lost, which was the evidence of everything that had happened. I mean, well, my face was enough evidence for the night before's events. In the end, you know, courts try and reunify the family, but that didn't really work. And I did come back to high school. My junior year, and I did graduate on time. I worked very, very hard to, even though I was not in school for more than half of my sophomore year, I did work very hard to graduate on time. My junior year and senior year were not without a tremendous amount of challenge emotionally, mentally, physically, self-esteem, battling family issues. Where was I even going to live? You know, as things, emancipation, things, lots of issues. But I did graduate on time, and I did play volleyball again, and I did. And I had to go through a lot. I was even in a psychological hospital for a little while, and our beloved coach, Charlie, was very instrumental in keeping me going while I was there. And so it was a tough time.
Well, yes. I mean, at the very least, a tough time just makes it sound like a kid's birthday party. What I hear through all of this is so much, but I mean, at the beginning, a lot of it was survival. You were just doing what you had to do, the lying, the being inauthentic, which I know is not your heart. That is so far from who you are. And then just doing whatever it took to survive during those younger years. And then once you just got your voice and you started using it, knowing that you were most likely going to take a beating for how you were standing up for your grandparents or yourself, or knowing you were walking into the lion's den, you did it anyway and ultimately suffered a horrible consequence for that. But through all of this, like, I mean, the person I know you to be has always been the most supportive, the most loving, the most beautiful girl. Now that you've gone through the timeline, it's coming back to me. And I remember going off to, we were going to go play in the, I believe it was either the state or the CIF finals. And you wrote me the most beautiful letter and just was like so encouraging and like, you guys are going to kill it. And da-da-da, just so excited. And you were just always the biggest cheerleader in the gym. And it just crushes me even more so because I knew something was going on and I knew that things weren't cool for you at home, but I did not realize like how bad they were. And for you to always have that beautiful smile and that happy disposition is just, it just breaks my heart that that's what you, you did. But that being said, and the exactly why I knew I was being intuitively called to you for this topic for today's show is because you never once were the victim. And if anybody could have had reason to be at a young age when, you know, really we live as children, like it's all about me. That's all they understand is me, me, me. And they don't really get the big picture of being of service to the world or contributing to the family. That takes time to really, you know, develop in an average family. But you never once like threw up your hands and just said, oh, woe is me, like poor Jen, just going through all this horrible stuff. And you very well could have, and everyone would have agreed with you, and you would have enrolled them all into your pity party. And that's just obviously not the right term for what you experienced, but you could have very easily, very, very easily drawn people to your victimization and your sadness and all that stuff. And most people would have just bought right into it, you know, in a minute. But you never once did that. You were always cheering on the next person, lifting somebody else, like struggling through your schooling and having to finish your school and catch up when you were out of school for a while. And you never once gave in. And that is just no coincidence that you were the person that came to my heart a few nights back when I was preparing for the show, because you are truly the definition of a warrior and a survivor and a thriver. And I just tip my hat to you, girl, because you're even more amazing than I knew you were. Wow.
Thank you. You brought me back to some of our volleyball memories. And it was true, you know, when I basically left sophomore year and we had won CIF and state that year, I remember writing that letter. I'll be honest, it killed me. I was... Charlie knows a lot about this. I was devastated that I wasn't playing. And, you know, for all of us playing volleyball for the best coach on the planet and in the best area, you know, for us, we were number one in the country at one point. And, you know, the bottom line is for us, it was like the Olympics. And it was just a time and a place and a year, and then even the next year, we even would coming back into volleyball, which was sort of slow going for me because I was just going through so much. I think because you guys were my family and you guys were my way to escape a lot of what I was enduring, and I think it was hard for me that I was always lying to everybody, but you guys were family. And so it was hard to not play, and it was hard to not be practicing and not be, you know, suffering through practices. And it was just hard. It was a hard time. And it, like I said, you know, while I think Charlie was our coach, was pretty devastated when all this went down because he used to play racquetball with my stepfather and at Babel Bay Club. And they were... You know, I'm not going to say they were buddies, but they used to play racquetball a lot together. And I think it devastated Charlie because he said, something's off. Something's going on. It was hard. It was hard for him because he was like a dad to me. And yeah. Even before he knew. And then when everything went down, he crumbled. And the night I was admitted into the hospital, he came and, you know, and he was just really there for me, carrying me through. Because the reality is I did kind of give up at one point. And it was probably my darkest hour. And I, you know, was 15 and I really kind of was giving up. And I went into sort of a rehabilitation hospital for a little while. And Charlie was very instrumental in keeping me going there and getting me out of there. You know, between he and also myself, just saying, this isn't where I want to be. I'm a kid. This isn't right. I think the one thing I held steadfast is I knew I didn't do anything wrong. Well, I eventually knew that. You know, I had to get through that process, but eventually it was, they do things like you have to write a letter to your abuser and things like this. And I wrote letters to both him and my mother explaining that this is what you did to me and this is how it made me feel, et cetera, et cetera. And those letters were not responded to well. But at the end of the day, I held steadfast that I knew that I finally was telling the truth. And a lot of people who know me today and know my life know that I tell the truth. And it's cost me a lot. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, always tell the truth, even if your voice shakes. That's probably my motto, is I tell the truth. I don't lie anymore. I'm not going to lie anymore. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for opening up to the listeners and for exposing something that's obviously really painful and deep in your past that you most likely would like to just move on from and forget. But I believe that in sharing this and, we don't know who's going to be on the other side of the station listening to this, and you may be doing something for someone who herself is only a young teenager that is going through the same situation, and for you to be so powerful and so gracefully expressing the story, you're giving her hope that there's another way out, that this is not the end. This is a season. It's something that's temporary, even though it may feel like forever right now. Like, you are the example of, you know, putting your feet back underneath you and steadfastly walking forward. That's a perfect word. I heard you use that as well. And so I'm going to take a pause. Let us all kind of recollect ourselves here, because that was very heavy. And I'm sure the listeners are feeling the same that I am, because I knew a lot of it, but even the details are just, breaks my heart. But let's take a pause real quick for some station identification. And also, we do have a caller that came in, and we'll pick up the caller just after this short break. I want to thank our Audible.com sponsor. You heard it at the beginning of the intro, but we are getting a 30-day free trial for any of the callers and the listeners today. If you go to audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio, then you too can get a book there. I did this after my first show about a month ago when I was a guest speaker. I jumped on right away. I didn't know anything about the Audible process, but I got in. It's linked to Amazon and your Amazon account, but you get 30 days free trial plus a free book. And I have since loaded 3 or 4 other books, and it's phenomenal because, much like you, Jen, I'm very busy, and I just don't have time, or I don't carve out time to sit down and read a book. Even though my library is filled with them, I don't have time to read them. So I have found myself little by little buying Audible books, and they're so reasonably priced, and I'm still getting the benefit of what the book has to share. So it's fantastic. I just can't say enough about Audible. You get your free audio book, and just see how it works for you. And you have 30 days to cancel it if you don't want to be a reoccurring member, which I am now reoccurring because I've gotten so much value out of just this first month's Audible. audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And a few books that came to mind, well, one that I loved about being the victim or the victor is Who Moved the Cheese? It's written by Spencer Johnson, narrated by Tony Roberts. I did actually read that one because it's a short book. I read it a few months ago, and it's all about choice and how you choose to be a victim or a victor. There's also a couple more books that I found on Audible in case this topic is resonating with you. Refocus, Rebuild, and Restore Your Life to a Life of Abundance. Move from Victim to Victor Today. That's by Henry Harrison Epps, and it's narrated by James Killavey. And the last book, kind of funny title, including the picture, but it's called Grow a Pair. How to Stop Being a Victim and Take Back Your Life, Your Business, and Your Sanity. And that's written and narrated by Larry Winget. So Grow a Pair.
Sounds like something I would have written.
I know. I was like, I don't know if I want to use that on the show. But
no,
but yeah.
It's perfect.
That may be interesting to you. But I'm going to take a minute to pull in the caller that has been so graciously waiting on hold. Caller, you're in the 386 area code, and I am putting you live as we speak. Caller, are you there in the 386 area code? If you can hear us, give us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Jimmy from Florida.
Hi.
How are
you? Welcome to the call.
Hey, great. You know, I'm just wondering, some Android phones don't support the flash player that allows you to hear it. So the first few minutes of the interview, I missed. So I was wondering if you could just take a second and just kind of, when you come back from the break, just reset part of the show so you could go into the final portion of the hour.
Great. Yeah, I believe if we will have a link that will be on blogtalkradio.com under our time and date with you'll see the title, Feel, Love, Heal, Victim or Victor, Consciously Creating Your Life. I believe if you click on the link, this show can be listened to at any time after the recording is complete. So I apologize for that. And I will definitely make a note to tell Blog Talk Radio about that. So you have an Android is what you're saying, and that was not, the link was not picking up right away?
Exactly. When I went to click the link to play it, it told me I needed to download a special version of Adobe Flash Player, and then when I tried to download it, it wouldn't download. So I missed like the first probably 8 minutes. And when I came in, it's very interesting, but just not hearing that first part of it. So like when you come out of the break, if you just kind of like take a quick reset and then go into the final segment, that'd be excellent.
All right, Jimmy, thank you very much. Do you have a question or a comment for Jennifer of the part that you did hear?
On the part that I did hear, a very true voice, very admirable, admirable that you were able to keep the focus on yourself, so that you could keep the focus on the other people around you and continue to support them while they went forward and did what you really wanted to do. Admirable.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you for sharing and for patiently holding on and trying to continue getting through. I want to acknowledge you for your perseverance in getting on this call and on the show and listening today. And I will definitely make sure that Blog Talk Radio is aware of that issue with the Android, and thank you for bringing that to my attention.
No problem. I figured it. At least I could be able to hear the show on hold.
Oh, you're amazing. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Have a good evening, lady.
Thank you.
All right, Jen. I think that... Well, I'm still just reeling in what you experienced. And I'm ready to go forward because your story does not stop there. As we discussed earlier, there are so many different paths your life has taken in your short time being on the planet. And one that I would like to use the next 25 minutes or so to touch on is one that I believe, it plays on the heartstrings of many people out there. But I ask that if you are comfortable and willing to share with the listeners something obviously very near and dear to my heart, which is motherhood. You're now a single mom of two beautiful and severely medically challenged children. Will you please share, first of all, a little history of when you found out that your babies were not average, quote-unquote, health, and what a day in your life looks like for you currently? So if you could give us a little history and then what that looks like for you today.
Sure, of course. Yes, I am a mom. And motherhood is probably, you know, when we think about our why or think about what our purpose in life is, and we all have different answers for that. But early on, thanks to teachings of from my great-grandfather, I pretty much knew, it's probably what carried me through all those early experiences also, was what really mattered in life. And I remember even from an early age knowing I wanted to be a mom. I also wanted to be an astronaut and a doctor and a veterinarian. And again, I ended up being pre-med in college, and I really was pursuing medical. But at the end of the day, what ended up truly defining my life was the instant I became a mother. It has also not been an easy road of 9 years since I have become a mother. I was in my late 20s. I became a mom. I was married. I lived in Florida. This was after I was injured in the service, and this was a couple of years after I was no longer in the service. And my son, unfortunately, everything was fine, but unfortunately, some things went wrong during birth, and he suffered hypoxia during birth and had a mini stroke. So my son has been in physical therapy since he was 3 months of age. He had right side limb neglect for years, and you would never know any of this. And any of the rest of his diagnoses, if you were to be hanging out with him right here building Legos,
and for laymen like us, what exactly does that look like? I'm not familiar with.
Okay, so when you suffer hypoxia, you loss of oxygen to the brain, and he stroked. Stroke in an infant is very different than, say, stroke in your grandfather. And but what happened is he lost his brain did not recognize the right side of his body. He was unable to, he could look with his eyes to the right, but he couldn't move his trunk or torso or head to the right side. He couldn't, the startle reflex, you know, his left arm would startle, but his right arm would not. What it meant was no crawling, no scooting, no, none of that. No walking, no, nothing. So we had just a, you know, again, it's funny. The reason why he suffered hypoxia is the cord was wrapped around his neck twice, and we didn't know because my water broke and I was already in labor by the time I got to the hospital, and we didn't know. So he went through a very long labor with me, and we didn't know the cord was running around his neck, and he essentially was strangled by the cord, lost oxygen, and this happened. I think because I had a medical background, you sort of had that, I don't know, maybe it's mother's instincts, maybe it's just medical, I don't know, but I knew, and I think I'm so intuitive, I knew. Everybody was saying, he's looking good, he's looking good, he's looking good, because he went through a lot of oxygen therapy and needs in the NICU upon arrival, but in the end, I took him home, and of course, the doctors write it off, everything's good. Everything was not good. And by the time he was 3 months of age, we were in physical therapy, and we worked, and then occupational and we had, you know, again, no walking, no scooting, no, you know, right side limb neglect, and but developmentally, doctors are saying, oh, he's fine, he's fine, he's totally fine, he smiles, he's totally fine. And I just knew he wasn't fine. We had no babbling, no sounds, no raspberries with his mouth. He had, he constantly drooled. So in your mouth, you have an O muscle that's like right under your lips. He had no control over that O muscle because of the stroke. So, I mean, just constantly drool pouring out of his mouth we would go through 7 t-shirts a day, et cetera, et cetera. So I demanded finally at his 12-month checkup that I would basically, I wish I was kidding. I wish the pediatrician was sitting here, but I literally did a sit-in and I said, I'm not leaving until you send in the request for him to have a developmental evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
I was very aware of our physical issues at that point. And we also had some immune system dysfunction that he had been diagnosed with. So we were sort of running the gamut with him physically and medically, but I knew developmentally something was wrong. And by 15 months and 18 months of old, he was in speech therapy and occupational therapy and still physical therapy. And so today, 9 years later, my son is, well, first of all, he is diagnosed with autism, cerebral folate deficiency and mitochondrial disease. Those are big fancy words for his body systemically does not work properly. And he has a tremendous amount of medical issues. He has POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardic syndrome, in which his blood pressure can drop, plummet within a second of him standing up or sitting up too fast or something, and he can pass out. And it eventually involves heart muscle, and right now we're not having any heart involvement, luckily. But so he has a host and gamut of sort of lingering medical and physical issues. Developmentally, this is a boy who was nonverbal until he was 4 years old. You would never know that now. He is communicative. Aww. He is communicative and funny, actually hilarious and sarcastic, and he's a smartass like his mom. And he is the sweetest, kindest, most loving, cautious, just incredibly protective over his sister, little boy. And we go through a lot. I mean, we're in a lot of therapies. We are, he has a very different life than the average little boy. We don't, you know, play soccer and have our soccer Saturdays, and that's not our life at all. When he was 2 and my daughter was an infant, I left my husband. I think my husband just, as things were really progressing with my son at the time, and at the time I was not aware of my daughter's difficulties as she was an infant, but with my son's challenges, I think my husband just didn't count on this cup of tea. I think it just wasn't what he thought our life was going to be like. And I think when I had a child, regardless of what happened, and the second I found out that he had some very serious health issues, your life instantaneously, I mean, as a mother, it already changes, but when you become a special needs mom, and anyone out there listening that is a special needs mom, I think you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, that your life instantaneously changes. You become a warrior. You're a fighter. You're scrappy. You are mean and angry and sad and sometimes, but you will die for this child, and you will die for healing and improvement. And it's just, you become tough. And I think my husband just, that didn't happen for him. And he sort of wanted our life and our experience as parents to be kind of what, I don't know, just like everyone else. And I mean, hell, I wanted that too, but that's not what happened. That wasn't the cards that were dealt. And I immediately reacted to the cards that were dealt. He didn't. And in the end, I needed someone holding my hand in the trenches and, you know, going to bat with me and basically fighting the war with me. And yeah. It became very clear very fast that I was not going to have that in him. And unfortunately, I had to make it, you know, who leaves their husband when they have a 2-year-old and an infant? Nobody. Nobody does that. Nobody sane does that. But after a tremendous amount of turmoil and some pretty ugly things that took place in our marriage, I, again, quickly realized that I was actually, believe it or not, going to need and be better to do this by myself. So after a tremendous amount of research, I left Florida. I ended up choosing Duke and UNC's neurosurgeons to be working with my son, a neurodevelopmental specialist to be working with him, and that's why I ended up choosing UNC and Duke and choosing North Carolina. I was considering California and Yale and a couple, and the Mind Institute up at UC Davis, but in the end, I chose North Carolina. Moved here. As things were going on and we were getting settled and kind of sort of just really grabbing onto, and I was addressing all of my son's needs here in North Carolina, I was very carefully paying attention to my daughter's development. And my daughter was this sassafras, feisty, but quiet little girl. And when you have a nonverbal child, first of all, children in early speech development does not, believe it or not, they do not learn speech development from their parents. It is probably 90% from a peer model. And that's why a lot of these early childhood preschool or early developmental preschool programs are really actually very wonderful for children, or homeschoolers or people that work with their children very, very early on in reading and writing. And it's very, very important for them to be around other children, because all that little chatter amongst two-year-olds and three-year-olds is actually critical for speech language pathology and development in the brain. Well, my daughter had no verbal model in the house. She just had me working with her, but and I started to notice that she made no sounds. And made physically, she was on target for everything. In fact, it's even advanced, which was not my experience, because my experience was with my son, who was physically challenged and disabled from infancy. So I had this little girl who could.
How old was your daughter when you started to see?
By the time she was a year and we had no babbling, no sounds, no nothing, I also immediately demanded an evaluation, which was hard for me because the thought of having two children with autism or two children with a severe speech language disorder or any of our issues was an impossible thought to me. But the truth is sometimes this does happen when there's no peer model. There's some children that are totally neurodevelopmentally intact, except they have no peer model, so they're just not saying much. And so you can have what's called late talkers. I don't particularly love that term, but it is actually real that there was a chance she was just a quote-unquote late talker. But I still needed to know. You know, I needed to know, and I think sort of like the same thread here, the same theme here is I am not one to bury my head. Don't get me wrong. I have more than often. I remember the day my son was diagnosed with his immune dysfunction, and we were looking at lymphoma, and it was, I felt like I pretty much died. And for like 3 weeks, I pretty much couldn't pick myself up off the floor. And I was pregnant with my daughter, and it, you know, and that stress wasn't good for her in the womb. And I mean, I have crumbled, and it's hard to pick yourself up. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you pick yourself up, you don't stay there, and you dive. And that's my steadfast theme started to become that I dive, I figure it out, I fight, I get scrappy, I get whatever, I fight. And so I did. I just said, no, as much as I really couldn't even fathom a child with another child with a developmental disorder, I felt like that was selfish and I had to help her. So that's what it became about. And I, unfortunately, as it turns out, my daughter is severely autistic and also has cerebral folate deficiency, actually severe cerebral folate deficiency. She was nonverbal until she was 6 and a half, and she is no longer nonverbal. We have fought very, very, very hard for her words, and she is not functionally communicative. She has a million words and sings and jokes and laughs and is a very, very, very happy little girl. We still have a long way to go, but damn it, my little girl speaks now. So
what exactly? Functionally communicative? communicative? What is that?
My daughter doesn't have, she can't have a conversation with you. She's able to ask for her basic needs. But outside of that, my daughter is not a communicative person in the world. But we're getting there, and we will get there. My daughter will always have needs. She'll probably live with me for the rest of her life. I am praying and hoping and intending that my son will be able to live independently with support. He will still need me, checking in on him and or being there for part of his, you know, life, living independently with maybe a roommate or maybe even someday I pray for a wife or something, but whatever makes him happy. But I think he definitely, I truly believe that he will get there. My daughter will have profound needs for the rest of her life, but oh my gosh, her trajectory of progress through nutritional healing and our holistic care and me not giving up is astonishing. When you compare her development to regular peers, there's a huge gap. It's the Grand Canyon of gaps. However, when you compare her to herself, her trajectory to herself from 2.5 years ago, it's honestly a miracle. It's mind-boggling. And hell, I'm the one who facilitates it, but it's still mind-boggling. It still blows me away. And I'm so blown away. I feel like every month we're getting more and more, it doesn't just happen. It's not just happening. I guess that's what you're now wanting to know a little bit about is our day. My daughter also has cerebral folate deficiency, and she has significant mitochondrial disease, as particularly impacting her gastrointestinal system. My daughter has a gastric feeding tube that will most likely be there permanently, although I pray for that not to be. I hope that someday she's able to eat fully by mouth on her own and that her gastrointestinal system can cooperate and handle that. Mm. But at this time, that is not the case. She was given a feeding tube 2 years ago, and our life radically changed when that happened. When you have a person that is fed by a feeding tube of any kind, it's just a very different life. My whole experience in 9 years has been an incredibly different parenting experience than I suppose the majority of folks. Mm-hmm. I don't have the same kind of day. I don't wake up thinking about piano lessons after school and soccer practices and little Johnny has to go. I mean, that's not our life. Our life is very medical, very, very medical. Lots of hospitals and doctors. Lots of hospital stays. I nearly lost my daughter 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago. It'll be 3 years ago this October, to severe complications with her mitochondrial disease impacting her GI system. So I wake up with survival on the brain. Are my children going to survive today? And I wish I was joking. I wish that was an exaggeration. It's not. I work very hard believing that they will survive every single day. However, I literally wake up every day wondering if my son will have a seizure or pass out at school today. And I am literally on the phone with his nurse and his aide at school, or we are either texting or on the phone all day long for various issues. My son is now 2 years in a mainstream regular education classroom and thriving, but not without a tremendous amount of support by myself, his aide, the nurses at school. We've been blessed with two really great teachers the last couple of years. He used to not be in a regular classroom. He used to have to be educated in a room with severe and profoundly disabled children, and only those children, not any neurotypical peers, which are your regular average peers. So my son is also gifted. However, that's a tricky area when you're gifted and you also have autism and adaptive skills that are very, you know, low functioning. So of many children with autism, most children with autism have incredibly high IQs, but maybe they can't tie their shoes or they can't take a shower by themselves. So it's a different life. My daughter's again, our life is just very medical and therapeutic. It's therapies instead of soccer practices. It's hospitals and doctors. My daughter has a feeding tube, so that takes up a huge portion of our day, is simply her feeds and her medications and supplement protocols and nutritional protocols that I administer, which are honestly the only way she has survived and thrived and is making the amount of progress that she's making.
Wow, you are just an angel, an earth angel. And after knowing everything that you survived and thrived through your own childhood and then turning around, and I know nobody wakes up saying, I hope that I get a severely medically challenged child. And, you know, that's what we have this vision as mothers and as families and parents, that we just want this little a perfect world. And yours is far from it, my friend. But you have truly shown that with your determination and your mere survival skills, you will not let anything happen to those kids that you can in any way control. And that's just, I admire you even that much more. Jimmy, the caller in from Florida, is saying you're admirable. I mean, that's just, that word is so equivalent to the person that you are. And I just am so grateful that you were willing to share this, and you said yes to exposing yourself and your family and allowing us now. I believe this is creating space for more people to send you prayers and love and just hold you in their space of healing, because you are doing a fantastic job and an amazing job for your babies. And well, they're not babies anymore, but thankfully for you, you know, they're growing into children that without the kind of mother you are to them may not have had this this ability to excel as much as they have in such a short time. And I just give you so much love and strength, girl, and I'm really, really grateful that you were willing to share that with the callers and the listeners tonight.
Can I say something, Charmaine?
Absolutely.
And thank you for that. I've always been so grateful for your support and love, and I very much appreciate that. I'll say this to anyone listening. You know, our topic tonight is victor versus victim. You know, sometimes we are the victim, and it's okay to feel that way. It's okay to sit in it, to sit in and feel. And in fact, I think it's very, very important to feel what you're feeling and to suffer for a little bit and deal. And maybe you can't deal. But the biggest thing is I think it's important to not to live there and not stay there, not camp, not set up camp, not get out the satellite. You know, I just think it's very, very important to eventually hopefully you ask for some help, you ask for some support, and you get it, and you get out of this, and you dust yourself off, and you scrape off, you know, these horrible scabs, and you fight for life is very, very short. So I sure as hell am not gonna sit. I would rather spend my time creating what I believe in instead of thinking so much about what I've lost or what my child's lost or what I, you know, the family that I've lost or these experiences. Or I think it's important to feel that for a little while, and then eventually you leave that behind and you go get what you want and you go create what you want and you go intend and you take care of your babies and you, because, you know, someone has to make dinner and, you know, and you do what you have to do. You fight. You fight for your life. You fight for your children's lives. You fight.
Thank you so much for leaving us with that love nugget. That's something that I intend to create at the end of every show, is a love nugget from the guest, just something that take with them. And you said it so articulately, and I really am so grateful for you and your stories and your share and your strength, because I believe that for someone out there that is experiencing something, whether it was your childhood or similar to your motherhood, this will make an effect on them, and you are helping to heal others that are experiencing the same things, and maybe they are being reserved and they're not reaching out, and you've just given them that opportunity. I will ask you to share with the listeners your contact information, but before we do that, I'd like to also thank the Life Coach Radio Network for allowing this show to be aired. There are three more shows coming up tomorrow. Pasha Cook is on the Life Coach chat channel at, I believe it is 5 p.m. Eastern. No, I think 6 p.m. Eastern. There's also Unleash Your Potential. And on the Life Coach Radio Network, Spiritually Speaking, also at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. So you can find those at the Life Coach Radio Network website and also on Blog Talk Radio. So Jennifer, thank you again for being the most special guest today. And let the listeners know how they can reach you or contact you if they have any questions or if they just really want to maybe share their story with you that's similar. Go ahead and give everyone the best ways to contact you.
Sure, thank you. Anyone can contact me at my email, which is jen@jennifer.brook.wellness.com. The name of my integrative nutrition and holistic wellness practice is Jennifer Brook Wellness. You can find me on Facebook at Jennifer Brook Wellness, Instagram also at Jennifer Brook Wellness, LinkedIn under Jennifer Brook, and Twitter at JENN_Brook.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry.
My practice's website, which is at www.jenniferbrookwellness.com.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And also, if anyone would like to send me show ideas or contact me outside of this show, you can reach me at my website. It's feelloveheal.com. Or I can be reached at Charmaine@feelloveheal.com. And Charmaine is spelled Charmaine at feelloveheal.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Pretty much all the social medias are covered. And I just want to thank the listeners for listening in tonight and for holding space for Jennifer to so vulnerably be able to share her experience and her strength with us. And I wish everyone an amazing week, and we will see you again in a couple weeks. Until then, go be love and light and make a difference in the world like only you can. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Charmaine.